Sports. Wine. Life. This is the Macko and Cos podcast.
Hey, everyone, and welcome to the Macko and Cos podcast. I'm Matt Cos. That's Bob Mackwitz. We're brought to you by Jeff Pollock. He is our lawyer. If you need legal help, and you will one day, contact Jeff Pollock. That's Jeff with a G. JeffPollock.com. He's been our lawyer since the start of this podcast, which was like 8-9 years ago now. It's crazy. Hey, Bob.
Hi, Matthew. Did I tell you that I went to lunch with him the other day?
You did. We mentioned in the last pod.
Yeah, he gave me some financial advice. It was good. It was good to hear. He's like most conservatives, they know what to do with their money. If you need poetry, come to the NDP.
Yeah.
But if you need to grow your net worth, go to the conservatives.
Yeah. If someone's a nephew of a Trudeau, maybe don't use them for your RRSPs.
Well, I think the Trudeaus have done okay.
I'm sure they have. Fingers crossed.
He and Katy Perry are running around Davos this week. He seems happy.
You know, is it wrong of me that it feels like that takes away a little bit from his legacy? And it's nothing against him or her, but it's just when you're the leader of a country and then you're dating a pop star that everyone was making fun of because they went to space, it just feels weird.
I think it's the pop star, because JFK dated Marilyn Monroe and we all thought that was kind of cool.
Yeah, no, that's true.
Or at least so they say.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is that going to get me banned from Facebook if I say that the Kennedys killed Marilyn Monroe?
I don't think it would help. You know,
I don't know if they did or didn't. That's just the rumor.
Yeah.
I've got so much I want to get to today. I want to do something with you. Maybe we'll get to in a little bit called In Defense of Mitch Marner.
Okay.
I've got to believe that you probably discussed it this week with him and the Vegas Knights coming to town tomorrow.
What? Is it? It was all Sacramento Kings talk on the show today.
Check your schedule. I heard that on the secondary market, the tickets are really moving. I think people are just going so they can boo.
Makes sense. And my advice to everyone, cheer for the tribute video. And then after that, boo like crazy if you want to. Boo, boo, boo. Whatever floats your boat.
Okay, let's put a pin in that. I want to come back to that because I actually disagree completely. And I think I want to create, if not a defense of Mitch Marner, a checklist by which we can ask ourselves, how mad could we be?
Of course.
I want to apologize in advance if I sound stuffy or a little foggy. I've got a bit of a cold coming in. It's like a low fog that's rolling in over the lake. So you and I are doing this on Zoom.
So it's like you're like the guy at the, on the edge of the sea going, storm's coming. Like that's how you feel.
You seen The Fog by John Carpenter?
Yes.
Masterpiece. There is an evil fog that rolls over this small Northern Californian town. And by the end of it, Adrian Barbeau is running up the steps of a lighthouse to get away from it. Those are basically my good ideas right now. They are Adrian Barbeau running away from the fog.
So talking about the Kennedys murdering Marilyn Monroe.
I don't blame me. Blame Neo Citron. Okay, I got a question for you, Maddie. I want to revisit something that I said before Christmas, and I want to know, is this a fair statement? The Leafs recently lost 2 in a row. They lost to Minnesota, and then last night they lost to Detroit. Both of them very good teams. Good game. Well, I guess the Minnesota game wasn't very good. The Detroit game was pretty good, though. In any case, previous to that, they were 2-1-1 on the road and looked pretty good. And generally speaking, the Leafs have played some pretty good hockey. Bit of a lull right now, but they've played some pretty good hockey. Now, when they were in the middle of their down period, I said that by New Year's Day, we would know who they are. I feel we do. Do you feel that at this point, 50 games in, we know who the Leafs are? Because it seems to me like everybody can create an argument for anything from they're a borderline cup contender to they don't look like a playoff team.
I know who they are. They're not a playoff team. They didn't play great when they had all the home games and were playing against lesser competition. And every day, more guys are getting injured. So a combination of uninspiring play beyond that one 10-game stretch was great. That was a great win against Colorado. But then uninspiring play early, all the injuries now, I don't think this is a playoff team. Detroit is better. Montreal is better than what they were last year. And I know Montreal made the playoffs last season, but this is not a playoff team.
Okay, so 50 games in, they're 24, 17, and 9, which sounds impressive, but it really means that they're 4 games under 500. They just got a whole bunch of single points. They're 9th in the conference, and they're 6th in the Atlantic. Ahead of them in the Atlantic is Boston and Buffalo, and behind them, you've got the Sens and the Panthers. It feels like everything is pretty compressed. Well, it doesn't feel like, just mathematically. Everything's compressed. So when we talk about Boston and Buffalo being ahead of them, they're a point or two ahead of them at any given time. They could flop into a playoff spot very easily. Does this change your opinion of how playoff feasible this team is?
I've kind of been consistent. You know, Florida could get better, even though they just lost Seth Jones. But I think we're always going to be afraid of Florida. They deserve the benefit of the doubt. I haven't seen enough in the Maple Leafs for me to believe that this is a playoff team. And also, when you have injuries gets more compounded when you have such a compressed schedule, you know, and it also, it's not like there's a light at the end of the tunnel. There's not a player in the Marlies they're about to bring up. There's not a treasure trove of first round picks and young talent that they could trade and bring in a defenseman. That's Vegas. They're the ones that trade and get all the good players. So I don't see a viable way out where Toronto gets in.
So here's who I think they are. And it's more or less where you're at. Before Christmas, I said we'll know who they are by New Year's. Here we are, coming towards the end of January. We know exactly who they are. They're fine. They're a team that's pretty mid, and they're getting worse. If you look at them historically, they're trending down. If you look at them as exactly this moment, they're okay. Do you know what their goal differential is this year?
I'm going to say, is it even? Is it zero? Even.
It's zero, Matt. After 50 games, they are the definition of okay. That's almost amazing when you're trying to construct an argument where you see this team. They are exactly just fine. It's not a panic. On any given night, they can win. They beat Colorado. They can, you know, they might sneak into the playoffs. They might even make noise in the playoffs. But it's not because they're really good. It's because they catch a heater at the right time. If you look at the arc of this team, they're okay getting worse.
Yeah.
With Oliver Ekman-Larsson out now and Brandon Carlo hurt and Tanev is still hurt, the most important leaf has somehow become Troy Stetcher, who he picked up on waivers from Edmonton. He's, you know what I was thinking he's like? Because honestly, he's going to have to play 45 minutes a night. He's like that first Royal Rumble in 1992 when Ric Flair came out number 3 and wound up winning. Troy Stetcher is doing the Ric Flair Royal Rumble.
If Stetcher is playing over 20 minutes a night, probably does not, and it's nothing against him. He was great on the first goal last night against the Red Wings. But if he's playing over 20 minutes, that means you're dealing with a lot of injuries.
They don't really have anybody to call up. I thought Philippe Myers would never play another game as a Leaf going back about a month and a half. He just looked so terrible. It just didn't seem feasible that this guy could be an NHLer. But here he is. They're working around him, but somehow he's still getting his name on the lineup card. They're okay. And you know what astounds me? I heard some articles earlier this week about, should the Leafs go after Dougie Hamilton? Could he be the number one defenseman that this team really needs? First of all, no. And second of all, what?
I saw that, and that feels like slow news day. It feels like putting a Band-Aid on a bullet wound. You may slow down a little bit of the blood, but you're not dealing with the issue. Dougie Hamilton is not the answer. The scary thing is the answers are much more institutional. They're not about bringing in one guy or this or that. It's about a series of decisions, most of which have backfired over the last decade, and it leads you here.
You know who's got to run the Leafs? Sorry, Keith Pelly, but the man for the job is Mark Carney. And we got to have him stand up there and say, this is not a temporary situation. This is a rupture. We are entering a new form of civilization with the Toronto Maple Leafs. We can't be nostalgic. We can't cry about it. We've got a new set of rules.
Elbows up. The problem is
Elbows
up. Like literally, guys, could you put your elbows up, especially when you take on the Panthers?
The thing about the Dougie Hamilton was the Leafs have been good enough lately, or at least they were during that stretch, that you forget how angry you were at them. And you just want to believe so badly they're actually the team I want them to be. But you've said this so many times, Matt, and you're so right about this. People don't know how to properly assess things in sports. And the worst phrase possible is if they can just be their best all the time.
Oh, they just have to be consistent. Oh, that all. They just have to be consistent. So they've got to be Tampa and Colorado or Carolina. You know, they're not consistent. At their best, they over the years they would have stretches of consistent, but they're not a consistent team. And Bob, here's how you know it's getting bad. When I was prepping for today's show, I just typed up a note I haven't made since mid-December. Boston has their first round pick this year, top five protected. And I'm like, the Leafs are two more losses away from that conversation coming up again.
There's two things we've learned irrefutably from this season. One is the Leafs aren't really a championship team, and this isn't really a championship window. It's a competitive window, but it's not a championship window. If we're really good, we'll probably be where we've been for the last 5 or 6 years, a first or second round out. That's kind of who this team is. And whereas before that felt like a disappointment, now it feels a bit like an achievement. So we're mid. And we're trending down. That's irrefutable point number one. Number two is the loser point is killing the interest in the regular season. I can't handle the mediocrity in the standings. Nothing means anything, Matt. It's all turned into AI slop. Every team's about as good as every other. And this is supposed to create intrigue, but all it does is create
Apathy,
baiting. It creates
nihilism.
baiting.
Like it creates apathy, it creates nihilism. You know what it does? It doesn't define who the teams are. It doesn't define who's the best, who's the worst. When everyone is clumped together, that might be ideal for Gary Bettman, but I think it kind of hurts telling the story of what 2025-26 is. Yeah, the loser point, it was weird. There was a period where Boston was leading the NHL in wins and losses. Good for them. They never went to overtime. They either won or they lost. But I agree with you. It's created this big mush in the middle.
And that mush makes it as a fan. I think if you're like a so-so fan, then it keeps your team in the game and you don't really care. So you want to know that your team's competitive. That's going to help you be a fan of this sport. If you're really a fan, though, the way a lot of Leafs fans are, it just creates a sense that nothing really matters from night to night. And you get stuck in quicksand so quickly. You fall behind, and it is so hard to catch back up. The runs, on a positive sense, don't nearly so much mean so much. I feel like we've complained about this a million times, but really, the Leafs are stuck in place. This is a stupid conversation. They're in sixth. They win two games, and they could be in third, and they lose two games, and they could be in eighth. What the hell does that mean?
It means
We're
nothing.
50 games in.
Yeah. No, listen. It feels like everyone just wants the Olympics. You know, we're all just racing to get rid of this. Like, I remember when they lost to Minnesota, it didn't seem like many people cared. It was interesting just reading and sensing it afterwards. I think everyone is just in a big malaise. I think the loser point is a big part of it. I think where the Leafs are is a big part of it. The Leafs haven't been a very inspiring team, so it's hard to generate consistent emotion.
I enjoyed last night's game. They played against Detroit. They looked a little quicker. There was a lively pace to the game. It wasn't like the Minnesota game where they looked like they were stuck in mud. It was, even though they lost, it was kind of a fun game to watch. And Detroit's an exciting team. And when you see Dylan Larkin with the puck, he's pretty dynamic and he's so fast. And you know, I've got Moritz Seider on a fantasy team, so I'm always excited to watch him play, and he's been really good. It was just a good night for hockey. I liked it, even though they lost. But more often than not, and your point about the Olympics is a good one, is we're just waiting for it. Oh, yeah, I got to think the team's trainers are waiting for it too, because injuries are everywhere with this compressed schedule.
Yeah, I don't think we're going to see Chris Tanev. I think that's the biggest takeaway from the last 48 hours when Craig Berube said Tanev is debating whether or not to have surgery. It's January 22nd. They're 50 games in. Like, I don't think we're seeing him again this year.
Can I pivot, like, not away from hockey, but away from the Leafs for just a second? We'll come
Sure.
back to Mitch Marner, but You talked about everyone's waiting for the Olympics, and that's absolutely true. And in Canada, that kind of means we're waiting for hockey. And what that really means is we're waiting to see how the Canadians do against the Americans.
Yes.
I thought to myself, with everything that's happening in world politics right now, would you boo the anthem at the Olympics if you were there?
No, I'm not going to boo the American anthem. Certainly right now, if I'm doing my country rankings, the States has taken a bit of a hit, but I'm still not booing it. I wish things were different, but I'm not booing it.
I don't think I would boo because it's disrespectful to the people down there that don't want the chaos that the administration and about 40% of the population do want. But I thought about this. I've got tickets coming up to a game and it's a Canadian team playing an American team. Am I going to stand for the anthem? Am I going to stand for the American anthem? When they say, please rise if you're able and stand for the American national anthem, am I going to do that? I don't know. And I actually mean this. I don't know. I feel like the answer is no.
I'm not sure. Honestly, my first thought is, who am I? If I stand, it's not going to really do much. But then there is, it's you're talking about the bigger picture, more the existential conversation around it all. I think I stand to the point you made before. I think I still believe that the majority, and whatever percentage you want to say of the majority of people in the States, they're good people. I think there are a bunch on the right that are good people that are embarrassed by what's going on. And then there's everyone who didn't vote, and they're cringing about it all. So if you got over 50%, and I think the good still outweigh the bad of what America is, I am still going to stand. I'm not going to do it with the same level of joy as, say, I would have in the past.
So here's the counter argument.
Yeah.
And what you say is not irrational at all. I think I might quibble with your numbers, but regardless, I take your point. Carney talked about the need to take the sign down from the window in his speech at the World Economic Forum, meaning it was a reference to a famous Vaclav Havel speech where he talked about the shopkeepers and the greengrocers and how under communism they would put a sign in the window that said, Workers of the World Unite, basically in support of the authoritarian administration, and how they didn't believe it, but they knew that meant they weren't going to get a knock on the door and someone wasn't going to kick their tomatoes over. And it was just a way to get along. So you get along to get along. But the point was, it kind of put forward a lie. And Carney's point was, you have to name that stuff. And by naming it, you take charge over reality again. And I wonder whether sitting for the anthem isn't a way of taking it back, taking the sign down from the window, saying, you can't put a picture online of our country with your flag draped over it and a bunch of people pointing at it like you're going to take it over. It's aggression. It's rude. It's ignorant. And deep down in our hearts, we think it all might be a little true. You can't do that. And I wonder, they all freaked out when we started booing the anthem, going back around the 51st state stuff.
Yeah.
Think that really shocked people. It was like, wait a minute, they're booing us as though we were the bad guys. Guess what? You are the bad guys. You are the bad guys. Or at least you're as bad as some of the other people that we called the bad guys. You don't get a free pass anymore. And that was kind of Carney's speech too, was we let a lot of things pass because it was kind of good for us to do it. But now that it's coming back against us, we got to stop pretending that we're in some preferred category anymore, some kind of moral bay or cove that's protected from the choppier waters. It's come for us. So I don't know. It's a weird time to have an international best on best event because nationalism means something different than it did 18 months ago. If they had taken over Greenland with military aggression, you could make the case they shouldn't even be in the Olympics, according to the standards we apply to other countries.
I think the biggest bummer about this is just I don't want America to be the assholes.
Yeah, but they are.
They've been our neighbor. There is so many good things we've gotten with the United States. I mean, hell, they just announced the Oscars. So many of those films I loved, and they were done and produced and written by Americans all across America, living in LA, but people that work from all over. So there's a ton that I love with the States. I just don't like the idea of right now they're the dicks. That's not the world I want to be in.
True, but what if it's the one you are in?
Oh, I know it is. I don't
True,
like it.
true.
I'd
Whether you
rather.
want to be in it or not doesn't really
No.
matter.
Oh, I know that that's where we are right now, and it's kind of a bummer. You know, it's like,
Definitely a bummer, and I'm wondering is the right way to manage that. You don't want to overreact.
no.
You don't want to be emotional. On the other hand, you kind of don't want to be compliant, and you certainly don't want to put your head in the sand and pretend things that are happening aren't really happening. My feeling is I probably won't get up because I would feel more inauthentic standing than I would sitting.
Yeah. So that's the right, then that's the right decision.
For me.
Yeah, that's the right decision.
But I don't think I would boo. There's a level of disrespect. I don't want it to be aggressive. I think I'm ready for a passive, take the sign from the shop window down. But I don't know if I'm ready for throwing eggs yet.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Okay, well, speaking of throwing eggs and booing, let's get to the Mitch Marner game. Vegas rolls into town. Everyone's had this one circled. The Leafs aren't particularly great right now. Vegas is number one in the Pacific, but it's not like they're the Colorado Avalanche. So it's not like a battle of superpowers, which would have been more fun, but it is the return of the prodigal son. What response do you anticipate? You talk to the fans every day. What do you expect? What do you expect is going to happen?
I expect mostly cheers for the tribute video, and I expect a bunch of boos whenever the puck is clearly on Mitch Marner's stick. That is my, considering the level of booing that he got with 20% Leaf fans a week ago in Vegas, you know, I expect something much more amplified than that.
So I'm going to create a checklist, and it's the In Defense of Mitch Marner checklist.
Which you can do.
I'm going to make statements, and you tell me how legitimate are these statements when it comes to defending Mitch Marner's departure from the Toronto market. Okay.
Done.
One, he was great in the regular season, and he wasn't great in the playoffs, but to be honest, nobody was really that good in the playoffs, and he seemed to shoulder a lot of the blame.
I'm going to push back, not in the first part. I think they all took the blame. I think Nylander took it. Matthews got a ton of it. I think Morgan Rielly is the one who has skated the most from in terms of negative attention at him. I think maybe because he was here when the team was bad, maybe people feel bad for him. He's very quiet, kind of goes under the radar, very respected. But I think Matthews and Nylander, and to an extent Tavares, also got it as well.
I think that's a fair answer. Okay, number two, Marner milked the team when it came to his contract negotiations, but frankly, that's what bargaining is, and the Leafs paid him what he wanted.
Agreed. Agreed. Yeah. No, like Mitch Marner certainly had a bit of a chip on his shoulder. I don't know if that's the people around him. He was upset he wasn't getting the same money or attention as Austin Matthews was. And the Leafs gave him everything he wanted, but that goes on Shanahan, that goes on Dubas, and that's what negotiations are all about.
Okay, so that brings a kind of a 2B out of this, which is when that negotiation, especially the first one, got a little bit testy, his camp went public in a sneaky way. Can we hold that against him now?
Absolutely. Yeah, everything starts with him. He's the one that can decide what is and what isn't said. And, you know, maybe there's things we're missing. I don't remember this level of like thin-skinned or, you know, chip on the shoulder when it came to McDavid or Draisaitl or MacKinnon or Rantanen or Braden Point or Kucherov. Like you can point to almost any other star player. And there were some guys that held out. David Pastrnak didn't sign his last extension until well into the season when he was in his final season before becoming a UFA. But for the most part, I don't hear this same stuff. It feels like it's a different environment in Toronto. So again, that goes on the player, but then that also goes to the leadership group in Toronto from the people I mentioned in the past.
Yeah, I'm going to push back a bit on that one
Yeah.
because most of the people you mentioned are the clear alphas, the clear alphas on their team. And I think Mitch Marner's point was, I'm as important to this team as Austin Matthews is, and I want to be paid the same way he is. And that seemed ridiculous to us because Matthews was a goal scorer. He was a great goal scorer. We also felt like Matthews was in the company of McDavid, whereas Marner was a tier two star. But if you look now back at the team, Mitch Marner really drove the bus comparable to Austin Matthews. Or at least it's not ridiculous to suggest this. I was looking at the stats this year, and Marner is 13th in the league in assists. He's got 51 points in 48 games. And Matthews is 14th in the league in goals. So without each other, they've both, at what they do best, settled into the second tier. Is it possible they could be a little bit Lennon and McCartney, where together they were brilliant, but apart they have moments of great talent, but they miss each other?
The only put yeah, there's a lot of logic to that because they also played so much together. They had so many reps. I would say when we look at Matthew's numbers this year, a lot of that has to do with whatever is going on with him physically and what the hell happened to him at Christmas where everything seemed to get better. Because the Matthews we've seen since like the game before Christmas till now, he is playing at that elite level. So that's the only thing I wonder about. How much of Matthews' drop off is not having Marner? And there's obviously part of that. To not say so would be intellectually dishonest. But part of it is also just good old-fashioned injuries.
I will say, I do think that in the grand pecking order of the NHL, I would put Auston Matthews ahead of Mitch Marner. Seeing though that both of them were knocked for not being defensive enough, and both of them really turned their games into really two-way players, both of them outstanding. Marner's a Selke level trophy, Selke level forward, and Matthews is great too defensively. So I think the gap between them wasn't as big as we thought it was, but there is a gap between them. So I would call that a 0.5 defense. How about that?
I'm in agreement. Absolutely.
Interestingly, too, and the bit of the pushback on this is I don't know how I feel about negotiating in public when it's largely your family and your agent doing it. He's in charge, but he's also a kid. He's a kid that's been under the guidance of his father ever since he was a tiny pup. His father has kind of guided his entire career. And a lot of that chip on the shoulder seems to have come from the camp as much as from Mitch. And he's a kid. The person we're talking about is in their early 20s. And if you think back to your early 20s, I don't know how much agency you have necessarily. We may be looking at him like, oh, he's a grown up and this and that, but these kids are pretty sheltered. And I wonder if we sometimes we expect more from them emotionally than they're prepared to deliver because they're coddled kids who now find themselves in incredibly complex negotiations.
Oh no, that's very fair. That's why you never put 100% of the blame on it. The problem is that Mitch Marner and Matthews, and to an extent Nylander as well, all these guys, because they work in a different environment than just about every other NHL team, where the Leafs have their own internal salary cap, while most other teams, they don't have it. And these guys got catered to and spoiled way too early without any playoff success. And the problem is when they demanded every dollar and they demanded no trade and they demanded shorter term, when you do that, you make the life of your general manager, of your entire executive class, harder. It becomes a higher degree of difficulty than, say, if you're working in Florida, where you're going to have many more millions of dollars to play with at free agency and things like that. I think that's the first issue with Marner. I think the second one was not producing in games 5, 6, and 7. And then the third one was, nope, you're not trading me for Mikko Rantanen, even though Mikko would have done the deal and would have signed a long-term deal. And I think we can all agree if Mikko Rantanen was a member of the Maple Leafs, the Nylander injury wouldn't be as important.
Although, in fairness, you can also say that he wanted one more shot to try and win a championship with this team that he had seen go from zero to hero, or at least potential hero. And had he been dealt, he would have been on the free market afterwards. And in terms of money, it wouldn't have made any difference to him. But in terms of the narrative that he was living and wanted to see completed properly, that he was giving himself one more kick at the can. And it was a kick in the can that all of us wanted to see him take. Because even though Mikko Rantanen's a great player, in that moment, it probably would have been better to have Marner. Because a lot of these high-power guys you bring in at the last minute don't really deliver in the playoffs for you. They don't know the system well enough. They're not happy enough. The point being, the obvious one here, he wanted to try and win one more time before he went out the door. Can we forgive him that?
It's a great point. The only thing is, by all the reporting, Mitch had made up his mind before they came and said, "Hey, would you be traded for Mikko Rantanen?" That Marner did want one more kick of the can, but then after that, he was kicking the door down and leaving Toronto. So
We didn't.
I get why fans are upset.
Yeah, but the fans are being a bit irrational because the no movement clause is something that's collectively bargained, and he wasn't doing anything extraordinary. He was simply exercising his rights to be on the team, a team that had Stanley Cup aspirations, to say, I'm going to see this all the way through if I can, and I don't want to be shipped out for the last 6 weeks of the team when I've spent my heart and blood and soul to try and get this team, which has its best shot at the Stanley Cup here and now. Why would he give that up? Because fans say, yeah, but later down the road, that's going to hurt me.
He would do it because the team gave him everything he wanted every time he asked for it. So maybe now in return, you do the team a solid. Every year
Does that seem
you're
like
in.
an extraordinary ask, though? Hey, why don't you do the team a solid and throw away your chance at a Stanley Cup?
Well, you hold on, he'd be traded to Carolina. He could have won a
Yeah,
cup
but he
there.
wanted to do it with the Leafs.
Well, the Leafs gave him everything he wanted for 9+ years. They defended him. They never publicly ripped him. He always was invisible, like Matthews, like Nylander, like Tavares, like the rest of them, in critical moments in every playoff series. The team gave him everything. He did not deliver in the playoffs. And then when they said, hey, we're not, by the way, we're not trading you a shitty team. We're trading you to Carolina, one of the best run organizations in the NHL.
Don't we want players who want to win with the organizations that they came up with?
If that.
What you're describing as disloyal seems to me that it is kind of emotionally loyal.
No, because he knew he was gone anyway. The best
What
thing
does
he
it
could have.
matter, though? He had earned the right to stay there and see this thing through.
He did earn that right, but he also, once again, always chose him. He never once chose, let me try to help the franchise.
Bell could use a little bit of extra money. Why don't you cut your wage in half? It would be good of you. And they've hired you for so long, and you've had a great career there, and lots of people are being let go. They kept you. You should give half your money back. Are you loyal or what?
Bob, if you saw how much I made, I don't know how much more I could give back to
If I'm Bell, I'm trying to figure out exactly how to answer that question.
them.
Okay, well, let me throw this out, and this is away from. You talk about how players in Toronto want to take more money as they might, compared to Dallas or Florida or whatever. But there's an aspect of that which is danger pay, which is when you play in this market, it's not going to be an easy ride. So, in defense of Mitch Marner, if we're being honest with ourselves, Toronto fans are a bit of a death cult, and the organization is a bit of a haunted mansion. It's not exactly easy to play here.
Why is that only a hockey thing? And we have 4 minutes left. I don't remember Aaron Judge ever doing that with the Yankees. I don't remember Dak Prescott doing that with the Cowboys. I don't remember Jalen Hurts or Tua Tagovailoa doing it when they were 20 years old at Alabama. Why is this a hockey thing where it's more perilous to play for a Canadian hockey team than it is for the Yankees, the Cowboys, or the Crimson Tide?
I don't know, but can we accept that at least in the NHL context, it is harder to play for a Canadian team than an American team?
That
Do we agree
yeah, it
against
is. It
that?
seems to be. It's weird. It's a very weird
It
thing
may
why
be
this is
weird,
with
but
hockey
maybe
players.
it seems like a real thing. Okay, we got a couple more to clip through here in defense of Mitch Marner. Ownership is changing and things are more unstable behind the scenes than maybe we give them credit for. And you look at this and maybe he said, you know what, I don't think this team's going to win.
I think he made his decision a year ago because of your last point about the market.
Even a year ago, it's not like the team wasn't in flux. Kyle Dubas got fired in an embarrassing fashion, and the whole thing with Shanny and who's Shanny and the organization at the leadership level is changing. I guess we have this idea that the Leafs are so good. Why wouldn't you want to be with them? But if we're honest, they're not the most stable organization or the most successful.
Well, but the pushback is actually Sheldon Keefe survived there longer than your average NHL coach. Babcock did before, and Shanahan was there for a decade. So there was some stability, even if there was the rising changes with all things Bell and Rogers.
Okay, and finally, the team wasn't built right, and there's nothing one player could have done about it, no matter who that player was.
Check, check, check.
All right,
Fantastic.
quickly,
Yeah.
before we go, New England versus Denver, who you got?
Ugh, I got New England. I got New England. Like I don't trust. Obviously, no one trusts Jared Stidham, and I think the only advantage maybe you get the altitude, and that is a great defense. And Drake May has been very sloppy, and if not for CJ Stroud, we'd be focused on that more. But I think New England wins, and I think New England covers.
Okay, so we have a steak dinner riding on this at the Keg. So the spread is 4.5 points. Do I get those 4.5 points?
Of
I'm taking
course, I'm a man of
Denver.
my honor. 4.5, absolutely.
Okay, let's see how it goes. I
Yeah.
like a ribeye. LA and Seattle, LA plus 2.5.
Seattle's defense is so damn good. And the big concern I have, I'm going to take Seattle and I'm going to cover. I'm a basic bitch. I'm taking both the favorites. This won't go right for me because Vegas exists. But Matt Stafford looked bad against Chicago's defense. Chicago has an average defense. You're now going up against Seattle's. So I will take the Seahawks. I will take the points for this. And so, yeah, I will take Seattle in the NFC.
I'm with you on Seattle, too. So even though my opinion doesn't matter much because I'm an enthusiast, whereas you are an expert, sponsored
by
Frank Rule.
That's right.
Are you Matt? Do you have a nickname? Like, are you like Jimmy the Greek, but do you have a nickname? What's your nickname?
I don't have one. And also, thankfully, I'm not like Jimmy the Greek.
Thanks for listening to the Macko and Cos podcast. Remember to subscribe on iTunes or Audioboom. And if you like the podcast, leave a review. If you don't like the podcast, then maybe don't leave a review.